Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 5 of Infield Chatter, the AZ Stake Fit podcast. We're coming to you a little late this week, and it's not because this is the second time we're recording this. Nope. That is not something that happened. Nope. Not once.
That'd be crazy.
In related news, do not use McAfee because it is shit.
That's your reverse endorsement of the week.
Worth its weight in gold. I'm Charlie Debo. I'm joined by Timothy Jeffcoat and Devin Jessup. And we're going to talk about baseball and stuff. Possibly these.
Emphasis on the stuff.
Yes.
All the stuff. It's like so much stuff.
It's like golf and stuff, but we're not doing golf. We're doing arcade games, go-karts, that other stuff.
It's like Bed Bath & Beyond, but we're really focused on the beyond.
Anyway.
It's like sticks and stuff. And we probably have about equal sticks and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I just want to make a note about something we touched on a lot in last week's episode with a sporting event going on right now. Since the now unofficial motto of Infield Chatter is Bleep Ohio, I just want to point out that there were 4 Ohio-based teams in the men's NCAA basketball tournament. As of this recording, 3 of them have lost. And I am going to take direct credit for that, and that we have powers far beyond what your wildest dreams.
I don't know. I can imagine a lot.
But seriously, Ohio. You know what they do in Ohio? In certain southeastern parts of Ohio, they say
eat terrible chili.
That, and as a direct cause of that, there is a certain contingent of Cincinnati Reds fans who get pissy that Joey Votto has. Gets on base too much via the walk.
Wait a minute. I just want to... Correlation is not causation. I want to know what exactly you feel is the chain of events from awful chili put on spaghetti to stupid Joey Votto, we hate him.
Well,
anyone who thinks that dog diarrhea is good... probably doesn't make a whole lot of other smart decisions.
Also, you know, your diet can affect lots of things. I'm sure a study will say it affects your moods that I don't feel like looking up, but that feels like a thing.
that's science.
That's science. But no, seriously, just be glad that we all, hopefully, most of us appreciate Paul Goldschmidt and other, you know, very good Diamondbacks players. We haven't always, because maybe it isn't the chili, but stupidity of that sort doesn't really... If we were taking, like, a freshman in college level literature class, it would be what they would call a universal theme.
Ooh.
Wow.
Then you write...
down to the academics.
You write that down, and you take your notes, you're like, good, I'm going to do well the midterm. Oh, good, class is almost over. But then that one guy who sits in the front raises his hand.
That guy.
And he asks...
So anyways, about the Lord of Darkness.
And yeah, he asks something that kind of sounds like a question, but it's not really a question because it doesn't have a WH or if statement. But he has...
There's just a lot of up-talking.
Just a lot of up-talking. You're like, you know, my next class is in 10 minutes on the other side of campus. You really got to get going. But the professor, who bless his heart, says, no, give him a chance to speak. And you basically want to kill him?
Your professor won't let you put your put stuff away in your bag while this idiot is talking because it's apparently making too much noise because, God forbid, notebooks should interrupt this inane not a question.
You guys must have had much nicer professors than I did, because they would have shut that shit down, like, instantly.
I'm just saying, that guy was lucky I had a class in 10 minutes to get across campus, because that didn't leave me enough time to give him the just smack of his life that he deserved after class.
But anyway, how did we get here? Ohio.
Ohio, as usual.
Stupid Ohio.
In Ohio. Jeez. There's some Diamondbacks talk this week. Diamondbacks Twitter is ablaze with something today, but I've been at work all day up till this point, so I don't really feel like talking about it. So
I would say it's a non-story. I'm not going to mention the guy's name because I've already said I was going to check out of the discussion, but
yeah.
It just basically comes down to, I guess Dave Stewart had some comments about wanting to make Dumbo work. Mm-hmm. A guy whose name rhymes with Dumbo. Wink, wink.
Oh, okay. I thought that Dave Stewart was going to work on the Dumbo remake with Tim Burton.
Nope. Not this time.
No, well, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Good news, Johnny Depp. I guess you've still got a job.
And, you know, there was an opening for him because I'm sure Helena Bonham Carter isn't going to be in it now.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
I don't know if they really would want to replace her with Dave Stewart in a wig, though.
Who says he has to wear a wig?
That's valid, I guess. Yeah, no, I mean, I guess if he doesn't want to.
Yeah, he has his own agency.
True.
He used
to have his own agency.
You beat me to the joke.
Joke stealing.
Well, that was more like an alley-oop, kind of. It was like me throwing up an alley-oop than me trying to dunk it, but you just...
I swooped it.
You did the sensible thing and dunked it yourself.
Yeah.
You can't alley-oop yourself.
I'm sure there was an NBA Jam game where you could kind of do that.
Probably, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Tim is on fire!
Boom shakalaka!
Yeah, I think that's about the only interesting thing. I mean, they sent down some players that I don't think anyone really thought was going to make the starting the 25-man roster right away. Like, Peter O'Brien has not looked that great at the plate or as a catcher. Yeah. So he just maybe needs more time, or maybe he's not the one. I don't know.
Dave Stewart was also talking about how, you know, he doesn't think that Archie Bradley is ready for the bigs yet, which he's young. I don't think anybody necessarily expects him to be in our starting rotation at the beginning of the season.
I don't know. Is he a Scott Boras client?
No.
I don't know.
No, yeah. I was going to make a comment about that. It could just be saying, yeah, we're trying to get another year of control out of him.
Could be.
Yeah.
I mean, because for those that haven't been following that story, that's basically what the Cubs are probably going to pull with Chris Bryant. Chris Bryant has mashed his way through the minors. He's done really well in spring training this year. Should be on the major league team. But there's been some discussion that, well, maybe the Cubs will just bring him down to the minors to start the season because I think he only has to be there for 12 days or something, some really small number. And then they would get essentially an additional year of control.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But to Scott Boras, who is Chris Bryant's agent, you know, that's not acceptable.
And also possibly an agent of hell.
Basically blew up the media on that one because he's just like, you know, this isn't fair and yada, yada. And then they went to Chris Bryant. He's like, well, you know, he works for me, so I stand by what he says and whatever. Yeah. But it is kind of the smart play and... There could be a certain amount of that there, and nobody cares about it being the Diamondbacks because, well, it's the Diamondbacks.
Also, there's no – is there any other any other job where you're like, well, he works for me. I'll stand by what he says. No manager is going to be like, well, I'm sorry. I guess that my employee promised you this or told you that we could give you 8 pounds of pickles with your hamburger. I'm going to stand by what they said.
Well, no, I mean a lot of times in – if it's something exceedingly negative, it's fairly common, especially if it's client-side facing, for management to completely not stand by their workers. So I could see him trying to save face. That would have been the expected thing, that he was willing to say, no, he's my guy, and I accept this. Then I feel like that's a little bit less common.
Yeah. And it's really just sort of the weirdness with, you know, years of control, that rule, because it does seem just really silly that 12 days could make that difference, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's obvious why it would piss off Chris Bryant or Scott Boras, but it's also one of those things that Scott Boras, his MO is that you don't take extensions. You go to free agency.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, this is basically the bed that he has made.
Yeah. Probably any other manager thinks to themselves, oh, yeah, I don't really like this. I wish that they weren't getting that extra year of free control.
Mm-hmm.
But they probably would just keep it to themselves, or they would maybe mention it behind closed doors or something like that. But I guess it just comes down to one of those things. It doesn't – 12 days is not going to kill the Cubs season any more than if this is what they're doing. 12 days of not having Archie Bradley in the rotation is not going to kill the Diamondbacks or save it.
It's not going to resurrect them from the dead.
Nope. I guess there's also some chatter from scouts, unnamed scouts, of course, that are not really enthralled with Yasmani Tomas's game. So that could be a big-ticket signing that doesn't work out. Obviously, it's way too early to make any sort of judgment on that because he hasn't even made it through spring training, let alone been able to go down to the minors. But that seems to be the other thing that people are kind of getting their little, I don't know,
I think there's, it's too early. There's still time. And the only thing about Tomas, I'll say, one way or the other, is that they probably should cut this, just cut the third base thing. Like, it's like we were drunk, we were at a party, we wrote something down. Then, like, then I woke up and it said, yes, bye, Tomas, third base. And I was like, whatever. Don't drink Jaeger, kids.
That's just a good life rule to live by. Yeah, no, but I agree. I mean, I think it's...
I mean, but that's the only thing. Anything else is just spring training, whatever. I mean, it's still adjusting to the American game, so...
Yeah.
A topic I wanted to get to this week is baseball books. As you know, baseball is a thing. Books are a thing. And sometimes there's a Venn diagram of those two things meeting. So I just want to... sort of ask, read any good baseball books lately? Because I have. I could go first if you want.
I think we should put Devin on the spot, because the last time we tried this recording, he didn't have anything.
I have some really bad news.
The situation hasn't changed.
I don't know how to read.
Oh, oof. No. Is that true?
I'm illiterate. At least that's what I read online.
Oh, you went to WebMD?
No, I said I'm illiterate, not that I have cancer.
You have you have literacy cancer?
Yes. Cancer of the reading.
Yeah.
Much like a cancer cell in the body, my bookshelves seem to be constantly expanding at a concerning rate.
And really the only way to help things is probably to remove it completely.
Yeah, pretty much. And... that's not going to happen. Nope. No.
Yeah. I'm looking back at my overflowing bookcase, and I'm kind of in the same position. And that's, really only one bookcase.
Well, on the subject of baseball books, I recently, like a month ago or so, read and finished Jonah Curry's book on the history of the Montreal Expos called, this is a full title, Up, Up and Away, : The Kid, The Hawk, Rock, Vladdy, Pedro, Le Grand Orange, Yuppie, The Crazy Business of Baseball, and the Ill-Fated but Unforgettable Montreal Expos. And, like I said, it is sort of a history of the Expos. There's your standard sort of listing of events, but there's quotes and interviews, too, which is always fun. But there were a few interesting things, mostly about the inception of the Expos, that I found, interesting. First off, Major League Baseball was really jonesing to get into that market for some reason. Because, Montreal is a very sort of largest cosmopolitan, multicultural kind of city. And, especially during like the early 60s, expanding, so they wanted to get a foothold in there. The thing is, Montreal didn't really have any baseball infrastructure, and getting a stadium built was not an easy task. And so their first, few seasons, they literally played in, they found a baseball field in, a park, and then built bleachers around it to make it kind of major league ready, at least, by 1960s standards.
Very different than current standards on baseball stadium construction.
Seems like a solid plan.
Yeah. The second thing is that if Montreal wasn't ready to answer the bell, which for a long time they weren't, they were going to give that franchise to Buffalo.
Who would want to go to Buffalo?
sad people.
More like Buffalo.
Yeah. I've made that joke quite a bit on Twitter after the Bills lose.
Yeah. But, yeah, Buffalo's had a few cracks at trying to get a Major League Baseball franchise, but...
Here's a fun fact about Jerry Park, which was the first Expos Stadium, the temporary one before they finally made it into the Olympic Stadium.
Yeah.
It had a pre-existing swimming pool just beyond one of the walls.
Mm-hmm.
So oh, yeah. You could, in theory, hit home runs into it, kind of like Chase Field's pool. So we're not really the first to have a pool in our stadium, even though it wasn't in the stadium.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I remember reading that. That's kind of funny. Just...
That's the one main thing I think of whenever I hear about Jerry Park is that they had a swimming pool. That book does sound interesting. I'm definitely going to have to check it out because I don't think I've ever seen an Expos book before. Maybe they have them in Canada, but I don't think I've seen any here. And it is kind of an interesting story just in general how, it was this other team. It's got... They were doing well for a while. Maybe not from the results. They weren't really competitive most of their years, but they weren't the absolute disaster that they were after the 94 strike. And if anything, it's that 94 strike that killed them. Partially because they were doing really well.
The 94 strike put them on life support, and Jeffrey Loria unplugged it.
Yeah, exactly. Because they had a great team. Would have most likely made the playoffs and maybe even made a run for the World Series. So they finally had a team that looked really good. You look at the roster and it's just stacked with talent.
Yeah, the lineup alone, young Larry Walker, young Marquise Grissom, young Cliff Lloyd, young Pedro Martinez of the pitching staffs. I mean, there's just... Yeah, there was talent there.
And then after the strike, when they come back, they basically blew it up, Marlins style, but, before the Marlins had ever tried it before. So if you're a Montreal fan, what's the point? And then, Jeffrey Lurie was even worse for them.
Yeah, that's a... Sorry.
I was going to say, I think it's really interesting to look at that time period for the Expos and just, think about what they could have done if they had kept that roster together. Because they did have, they had Randy Johnson around that period. They had, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just forgot one of the names you said.
Pedro Martinez.
I mean, think about a starting rotation built around that, and think about the 90s Braves, who would have finally had some sort of potential rival in the NL East to face off against.
Yeah, that would have been fun, and the Expos also had, after the strike, they had Vlad Guerrero for most of the early part of his career, and it was kind of sad that his early years were kind of wasted there, because he was amazing through his, when he was in Montreal.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Just probably the biggest tragedy, though, is that we lost those sweet, sweet uniforms, because they had the coolest uniforms. And hats. That's important.
They had a good, fun color scheme, yeah. I also remember the Montreal Expos being in, I want to say, 2002, when they were kind of in contention. They made, in hindsight, possibly one of the worst trades ever. They traded for Bartolo Colon from Cleveland, who was just named the Mets opening day starter, by the way, so that's fun. He's still around.
He's still pitching? Wow.
Yeah. But they traded for him, and who did they give up to Cleveland? They gave up the following three players. Grady Sizemore, Brandon Phillips, and Cliff Lee.
Yeah.
All of whom, at various points in their career, were really productive major leaguers.
And really productive for Cleveland.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Phillips for Cincinnati, but yeah.
Man, freaking Ohio, why does it always come back to them?
It does. Yeah. I'm telling you, it's this big grand conspiracy. Ohio is behind everything that's awful. They ruined your favorite baseball player, if I recall.
No, Montreal ruined my favorite baseball player.
Oh, that's right. Now I'm mixing up the storyline.
The Montreal Expos, and we're going to put a thin sheet of pretend grass over concrete and tell Andre Dawson, hey, just go run out in the outfield there forever. Ruined the poor man's knees. I mean, not ruined. I mean, obviously, it's not like he retired in 1983.
Or had to be like a W amputee.
It's not like he became a cyborg.
That would have been awesome.
That would have been amazing.
Then they didn't ruin him, they improved him. Good job, Expos.
If only they had. Then, no, like, if the Expos had started taking players and turning them into cyborgs, I'm pretty sure they would still be either a Major League Baseball team or an international espionage/crime syndicate that James Bond would have to fight. It could go either way.
The Montreal Expo. Yeah, I could see it.
Yeah.
But, so anyway, that's sort of a long roundabout way of saying it. It's a really good book. Oh, and one more thing. The first ever opening day star for the Montreal Expos was a man named, he's still alive, Jim Mudcat Grant, who I've met before. I actually have a picture of him that he signed. I met him at a baseball tournament in Bisbee. We'll get to that later. But, yeah, it's a signed picture of him in his rookie season. I'm looking at it right now, of him with Larry Doby and Satchel Paige, which is pretty cool. He's also written a book, which I should, you know, try to get a copy of, called The Black Aces, which is about every African-American 20-game winner in the major leagues from, like, Satchel Paige to... It was released, I think, 2007, so, like, Dontrell Willis / CeCe Sabathia.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just sort of individual stories about each one of those guys. That would be a good book to pick up. Maybe when, if I do, I'll do a review on this podcast or something. Anyway, that's my book recommendation. Tim, since you are literate, anything?
I am actually literate, unlike Devin. The book that I've been reading recently, I'm a little bit more than halfway through, is a book called The Kid, which is a recent biography of Ted Williams by Ben Bradley. And I definitely cannot recommend this enough. It's probably the best baseball biography I've read, partially because Ted Williams is just an interesting character to begin with. He hated the media, he hated his fans, he was grouchy and outspoken and did lots of interesting things, even if he didn't want to do them, like fighting in World War II in Korea. He didn't really want to do it, but, you know, he did things that were more interesting than just simply playing on the U.S. Army baseball team. But that's only half of it, because there are interesting people, but you could write a bad biography. What's really good about it is that Ben Bradley, it's just obvious how much research he did, because every page is just filled with quotes or primary research where he actually went out and interviewed people that had either played with him or his relatives or distant relatives. He got a hold of letters. And it's just so deeply researched that you feel like it's just packed with information. I can't imagine reading anything else about Ted Williams and learning something that I didn't learn from that book.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out. Maybe it's at a library. I can literally check it out. Uh-huh.
It's been out for more than a year because I have a paperback version. Yeah. So I want to say it came, actually, I feel like it may have even came out originally when I was still working in a bookstore. So that's almost 3 years ago. Oh, I could be wrong on that timeline, but it's been out for a little while. It should be in libraries and probably anywhere that you can find normal books.
Yes.
Well, normal books.
Yeah.
Oh, those normal books.
Normal books. Norms.
Norm.
Just go down to your local Normcore bookstore, and you should be able to find it.
Well, what if, like, a Normcore bookstore just have, like, a bunch of serialized detective novels and, like, cooking books and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just 100% James Patterson.
Yeah, yeah.
Books.
That's who I was thinking of, yeah.
Yeah. It's James Patterson, cooking books, and those Bill O'Reilly history books.
Oh, God.
Not his political writings, but just the history ones.
Just the history ones.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this would
probably be the most successful, but also at the same time worst bookstore possible.
Kind of soul-crushing in a way.
I worked at a large publicly traded bookstore for years, and yeah, this would probably be more soul-crushing than that would be.
It's the CBS sitcom of bookstores. <It is.
laughs> Yeah. Or CBS crime show.
It's CBS anything.
It's the CBS of bookstores.
Yeah.
CBS. We might be based out of Ohio.
Oh, here's a good Ohio joke I saw on Twitter a few days ago. Where is engagement, Ohio? Between Dayton and Marion.
Is it really, though?
I don't think it's a real place. That's a joke.
Oh.
Or maybe it is. Hold on.
Let's find out. Nope. There does not seem to be a place called engagement.
Damn it,
Ohio.
Boys Life magazine.
Yeah, that's part of the joke. Because you see, kids, I'm going to do an explainer article on that joke. Dayton and Marion are cities in Ohio, but they also sound like dating and marrying, which are things you do in a courtship.
Oh, God.
Now look at this graph on the sidebar here.
And as usual, in the course of recording infield chatter, we find ourselves looking at Boys Life magazine's websites.
FBI, I'm only looking at the jokes. Calm down. And though it did remind me of the terror, because were either you in Boy Scouts, did either you get the Boys Life magazine?
No.
No and no for both of you?
Yeah, correct.
Oh. Okay, well, maybe one of our listeners, probably not Devin's mom. Hi, Devin's mom. But
probably not Jim.
Yeah, probably not. Well, no, there's boys.
No
Scouts. Scouts in
the UK. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right, it's my mistake.
But Boys Life magazine always had, like, a section for jokes, and they were always, like, the worst popsicle jokes possible. But they also had a section for Tom Swifty jokes, which I don't know if you guys know what they are, but it's basically... Yeah. Tom Swifty is a character where they have some sort of setup, and then his action for said would be some sort of pun on what he was doing. So, like, you know, I'm going to university, Tom professed.
Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly. Just month after month of those, and you're just like, ugh, why am I in Boy Scouts?
But yeah.
So is there a tolerating really awful jokes?
The funny thing is 90s Boy Scouts tolerated bad jokes more than it wanted to tolerate atheists or homosexuals. That's the joke.
Yeah.
And let's be honest. I mean, those bad jokes. Let's look at the jokes that you make, Tim. They have obviously stuck with you and affected your life.
It's sad. They touched me.
I honestly think bad jokes are worse than pretty much anything. So get your priorities together, Scouts. Anyway, it's good to have a discussion about baseball books, because that is one of like four types of books I have on my bookshelf. So the other being theater, technical theater manuals on lights and rigging and stuff.
Nerd.
Wow, it's like my job or something. Jeez.
excuses.
The second category is Calvin Hobbes books.
Solid choice.
Yes. And the third thing are Star Wars books. Now,
Star Wars.
You guys probably don't have strong opinions on that, but I generally kept to sort of early-ish Star Wars books, like the first Zahn trilogy or like the Rogue Squadron books. Not when they just kind of got weird later,
yes,
and said, hey, random fantasy writer who's kind of successful, write this, rather than, yeah, you know, finding good writers.
That's always been their MO, mm-hmm, is finding random fantasy writers, but it definitely took the wrong turn, and this is when I checked out mentally, was the, I don't remember even what the race is called, but those the alien race or species that was from beyond the galaxy and the
Force
couldn't the Force couldn't touch them. It was like, whoa.
That was when I quit too. Like, I read every Star Wars novel that came out up until a spoiler alert, somebody dropped a moon on Chewbacca and killed him.
Yeah. It happens in the first book, so
yeah,
you don't have to go very long to find that one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I still sporadically read them after that. The worst series, I think, was actually the Darknest trilogy. Did either of you guys read those. That?
Didn't read them. I heard that they were pretty bad, though.
It's really confusing because, like, this group of young Jedi end up with this, like, they go to investigate this species of, like, insectoid aliens and somehow kind of getting brainwashed and joining their, like, hive mind, and they're weird books. I don't know. I gave up on those after a while.
That's
the only good thing that comes out of the later books is there is one where I don't remember who becomes head of the New Republic. It's a former Imperial officer from one of the earlier books, but at one point she basically calls Luke into her office and is like, you know what? It seems like one of your Jedi goes crazy and kills a bunch of people about every 6 months. Why do you keep doing this?
But, very meta.
But of course, she's the villain, so it's a bad thing. But
yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, that's... Why is it relevant, you may be wondering to yourself, if you haven't already pressed stop? Hi, Devin Swamp. Only because they just announced that they're going to be starting to release new Star Wars books. They've already been doing it, but they're actually going to be releasing a new one towards the end of the year that's supposed to bridge the gap between Episode 6 and the new episode that's coming out, Episode 7, in December. And that in and of itself is not particularly intriguing because they've been making Star Wars books since the original Star War came out in 1977. But...
Which is funny to read, Splinter the Mind's Eye, obvious it is that this guy does not know what's coming on in the next movies.
Oh god! If you're thinking about what I'm thinking about, yes, definitely yes.
Yeah, it's awful in a variety of ways. One of which being that, if I recall from that book, they stuffed both Luke, Leia, R2-D2, and C-3PO, and then maybe one or two other people in a Y-Wing.
I think it was just those four.
Like, what the hell? It's clearly a two-seater, people. Two-seater. You could put R2-D2 in there because it would have
aftermath.
Yeah, but there's
no way... I mean, technically, I mean, you could probably... There's got to be a way to, like,
put him in one, like,
3PO off and put him in a cargo container.
I don't think it has cargo space, so you'd have to essentially be dragging it. Which, again, I don't know is possible in the universe.
I don't know. I mean, it's got to be
something. But the whole point is that they're releasing a new book, but it actually has a decent author attached to it, which they haven't done in a long time, as Chuck Wendig. Mm-hmm. So against my better judgment, I feel the hype coming on about it, and I feel like I'm compelled to read this new book.
Yeah.
I will admit that I did actually get a Star Wars book from the library a couple weeks ago. I haven't started to read it yet, but it's about Grand Moff Tarkin. I mean, that could be interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Is it part of their new series though, or is it part of the old Jedison canon?
Well, I mean, it's set in between the prequels and the original movie, so I don't see why it would.
No, because they...
For the new canon.
The new canon, what they set up is they essentially said anything that is not one of the shows or one of the... Well, Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels or one of the movies is now essentially an alternate universe version of the canon.
So does that mean that we don't have... I mean, that means we don't have Grand Admiral Thrawn. But does that mean they did keep in, like, the Clone Wars stuff where there's Mon Calamari knights on sea creatures that are jousting?
Is that in the Clone Wars cartoon?
I don't remember. I think that's where I saw it. I don't know.
If it's in the cartoon, then it's canon. And anything they're going to produce now... So if it was released recently, since
it just came out.
Okay, then
like
it is
last. Canon. It came out in December, so
yeah. Then it is part of the new canon, and they may pick and choose stuff from the old stuff. It's hard to say because they barely released anything.
Well, they you know,
in the prequels, you know, you could tell George Lucas picked up some stuff that was originally introduced in the novels.
Like Coruscant?
Yeah, Coruscant, yeah.
Or
the word Sith, or...
No, because the Sith was in his original notes.
Well,
and script. It was just never said. So, in your face, Charlie.
It was like Ewok. It was one of those things we only knew of because of toys.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's probably long enough of the Star Wars.
No, I could go for another 15 on that.
I could. I definitely could.
Oh, could. Definitely, yeah.
But
unless you want me to read one of my theatrical technical manuals out loud.
Not really.
Okay, yeah, because they're kind of dry.
Oh, interesting. Apparently, Isla Sakura was originally in the...
oh, yeah, that's another one. That's,
stuff.
Yeah, that was EU that got pushed back to canon.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, there's different stuff that have happened that they've been, he was willing to do that for. And I wouldn't be surprised with the new stuff going forward if they do something similar, if they're going to pick and choose. But I would also would not be surprised if some of the biggest characters like Mara Jade or Qorn Horn are jettisoned.
Yeah, I mean, probably, because, like, the Mara Jade storyline is interesting, but it is so Luke Skywalker-specific that it kind of gets tiring.
Her storyline is kind of, like, indicative of the EU as a whole. Started off interesting, but then just sort of ballooned out of...
Yes. Both her and Qorn Horn have the similar problem, where it starts off with their initial... perhaps introduction is interesting, but they both then essentially become so overpowered or special.
Yeah.
Like Qorn Horn's whole deal is like, well, first he's an X-Wing pilot, okay, and he's like the best X-Wing pilot, great. But then suddenly he's a Jedi.
He's like the third best X-Wing pilot in Rogue Squadron.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's one of the best. Maybe not the best in, but he's, you know, that was the best squadron. He's one of the best in the best. And then he becomes a Jedi.
Yeah.
And he can't just be a Jedi. He has to be a Jedi with special Kyrillian Jedi powers that nobody else has because it's Qorn frickin' Horn and he has to be special. And the same with Mara Jade. It was just like, well, she can do this, that, and you know, everything else. And she's got pretty red hair and she loves her so much.
On the other hand, I do like the idea of, like, there being other Jedi, other Jedi traditions.
Yes.
Like, I feel like that was something that the EU oddly didn't do enough, where they're like, you know what, yeah, the Jedi, it's the Jedi and the Sith. It's an entirely huge galaxy full of billions of stars, and yeah, there's this one faction that's slightly spun off. Yeah.
And lots of factions, and that would have been sufficient, but it wasn't just that he was a Kyrillian Jedi, and Kyrillian Jedis have some sort of their own history or... style or whatever, you know, culture within the larger Jedi framework, but then he had to have special, specific powers to make him special. It reminds me of the last book of Wheel of Time.
Oh God, it goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on.
I'm losing you guys, aren't I?
Did Qorn Horn tug on his braid?
And so, if you haven't fallen asleep, I want to end on... I can't. Maybe I don't.
Hi, Mom.
I want to add on something fun that is done. I had mentioned Mudcat Grant earlier in the episode. Yep, go back, check. Listen to the whole Star Wars book discussion again. But there's two Arizona Vintage Baseball events coming up this month. This upcoming Saturday at Championship Park in Tucson, which is, if you're in Tucson, that's basically, it's that park, if you're on I-10, it's right, it's like, it's west of the, it's right off the INA exit. Again, if you're from or know Tucson, that makes sense to you. If not, if you aren't, might not, and I don't care. But no, it's the championship tournament. They kind of rotate it between the Phoenix area, Tucson, and the vague morass of southeastern Arizona every year. So it's Tucson's turn, but it's an all-day thing. It's all eight teams in a double elimination tournament. So if you're playing a long time, you're going to get real tired, I tell you what.
Yeah, I can vouch for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
all three of us have played it before, so we may be slightly biased. But I, even though I'm not playing this year, I would definitely recommend if you get a chance to see some vintage baseball games. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to play.
It's, yeah, it's fantastic.
And
the crowd's usually fun.
Yeah, and the venue for the championship, anyway, they're nice fields. It's $3 admission, but it's a place that has like concessions and stuff, so that's kind of cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's classing it up.
Classing it up, yeah. It's the only park in Tucson, so, you know, they gotta
get that revenue.
Gotta make it count.
Mm-hmm. All right, sorry, I think that may have been a part where you were slightly cutting out for me. What field are they playing? Are they at the former TEP?
No, it's called Championship Park. It's on It's on the northwest side of Tucson, whereas what used to be called TEP is on the south side. Duh.
All the same to me, man.
Yeah.
It's all the boring side of Tucson.
Tucson has like three zones for me. Mm-hmm. There's a part of it that seems really nice, and it reminds me of Fountain Hills,
mm-hmm.
Arizona. There's a part that's like, oh my god, I'm going to get stabbed, and it reminds me of Yuma. And then there's U of A.
Yeah.
Where all those are in relation to each other, no clue.
I'd say those are definitely three distinct areas. I'd add more, but nobody cares about that. But yeah, if you're in the Tucson area this upcoming Saturday, games start at 9:30 in the morning and will go to like 8, so it's an all day thing, so check it out.
Another good one to check out if it's an either or if you can do both, that's also good, is the Copper City Classic that they do down in Bisbee, because they actually play at the Warren Ballpark, which is the oldest semi-continually used ballpark still standing.
Right.
It was built a year before Rickwood Stadium, which is the one that people normally cite because it actually has a minor league team still. But the Bisbee Stadium is used semi-regularly.
Yes. They use it for... It's the Bisbee High School's varsity baseball team field. It's also their varsity football field. If you've ever been to southeastern Arizona, it's very rural, like, definition of. But, you know, it's a nice place. This year's is April 11th and 12th, that Saturday and Sunday, and the money there that you pay for tickets goes to keeping the park renovated, because the bathrooms have been in previous years terrifying, and...
They look like South Tucson?
Wherever
the stabby part of Tucson is?
If stabby part of Tucson is a thing of scary, the bathrooms at that ballpark are more like hell scary.
Wow.
But they've actually renovated those the past few years, but that was like their main priority. But, you know, it's just to keep upkeep of the field and, you know, preserve it as a kind of historical site. There's been a litany of, like, really great players that you've heard of who've played at that ballpark. If you ever get down there, get a chance to talk to Mike Anderson, who's a very nice fellow who's sort of the like historian of the society that preserves the ballpark, and he'll talk your ear off. Gladly you should be about that. Hmm. Oh wait, let me rephrase that. You should be glad about that, because he has a lot of interesting stories, and yeah, and they usually dedicate it to past players who have played there or stuff like that. So that's a lot of fun. So if you can go to one or both of those events, please do. Yeah,
if I could be playing vintage baseball, I definitely would. It just doesn't really work with two small children. But maybe someday in the future I'll get to play again.
Yeah. Give it several years, and you'll have one who's old enough to play. So.
Yeah, then I have an excuse. I might have two old enough to play at some point.
I believe that's how the progression of time goes. Yeah.
Well, you know, but it depends on their interest.
Well, yeah, I guess. What, you're not going to force your kids to play sports? What kind of a dad are you?
You can follow myself, Tim, or Devin on Twitter at various handles. What, like I'm going to tell you? You can follow Easy Steak Pick at Easy Steak Pick. So you got that going for you. No, seriously, I'm not going to tell you. You can probably figure it out on your own easily. Go away. I want to go to sleep. Bye. Tim, are you alive?
Sorry, guys. I was just doing a little laundry.
Okay.
Look, the dryer stopped. I had to get my work shirts out so they wouldn't get all wrinkled.
It's understandable.
You know, it's just keeping it real here. What were you guys talking about?